Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we ensure on this network that you, well, basically there's actually only really one rule: have fun. And we do, invariably. My very special guest today is Brandon Turbville. He has two websites, activistpost.com and brandonturbville.com. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Vinnie. Thanks for having me on.
Now, for those who may be unfamiliar with you, and I think that kind of includes myself as well, why don't you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm a staff writer at activistpost.com, and I've been a staff writer there for about 2 years. And again, I also have a backup blog, which is brandonturbeville.blogspot.com. I'm author of 4 books, one dealing with Codex Alimentarius, one dealing with solutions, one called 7 Real Conspiracies, where I down the seven different conspiracies that are usually called conspiracy theories, but are actually quite documentable, if that's a word. And it's broken down very in a very simple manner, very short manner, concise, the average person who may not have come into contact with this information before. And I'm also a host of a radio show, which is an hour a week on UCY.TV. It's called Truth on the Track. So I wear many hats, or at least 3 hats. It's not really many, but it's 3 hats.
You said UCY. What does UCY stand for?
You know what? I really don't know. I kind of signed on. I have an hour a week for the show, and that's one of the things I never asked. So,
because I recall, I think last night I was showing my friend Dan a documentary called Sugar, the Bitter Truth, doing a presentation at the University of California. And they had, I think it might have been UCY-TV, I think that was producing it, or something of that nature. You're not in the University of Cali, are you?
No, here in South Carolina, other side of the country.
Totally obscure connection. Never mind. Moving on.
Well, you explained it better than I did.
Well, in either case, you've written 4 books. How old are you, mate?
I'm 29.
Wow! That's a young author. Are you planning to, like, get like about 50 books done by the time you cark it, much later on, assuming the New World Order doesn't bust through your door and take you away to a FEMA camp?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of expecting the FEMA camp first, but, you know, if you have time to run out of the camp, then I don't think that 50 books is too much to expect.
Like a Noam Chomsky in the making type thing, without the propagandistic tendencies, perhaps.
Yes, a Noam Chomsky. That's you have a lot of time in those FEMA camps, I hear. So before they exterminate you, of course. So I figure I'll take my little pencil and paper and chug out 10, 12 books, you know, and whatever time I have left.
You see me, I'm probably going to just practice my hand moniker, you know, like...
Well, maybe we could collaborate. If we're in the same FEMA camp, which besides the planet, I don't think we will be.
Hey, and I always thought that would be an interesting phenomenon, is if all the truthers got rounded up and then they get put in a FEMA camp. You know, there's one thing you don't want to do is put a whole bunch of individualists together, because they will not be caged for long. They will collaborate and they will figure a way to get to bring those double fences down.
Yeah, it would be nice to see how long take before the escape routes and the revolts started taking place. You know, a camp full of people who are awake actually doesn't seem too bad. I'm kind of making the FEMA camp sound pretty good right now.
And that was also another element that I'd like to do. You know, what if we made our own, like a summer camp, and we just called it Camp FEMA, where we invited all the truthers and the truther kids and things like that. You know, you had camp counselors and all of that sort of stuff, and you'd abseil off World Trade Center replicas or go kayaking down contaminated streams or something like that. You know, just good old-fashioned fun.
Yeah, we'd have plenty to talk about as we did all those things. So,
yeah,
all around for a campfire. Let's get this started.
Equipment around, yeah. All right, I'm sorry. I'm very off topic today because I only woke up about maybe 25 minutes ago. Had a very late night answering about 500 emails or something like that long into the night. So you'll excuse me if I'm not, you know, quite on top of my game today. Now, in terms of importance, you've written one book about Codex Alimentarius, and in my opinion, considered as it is, there's two things that really do affect everybody, and they affect everybody already, and will quite likely affect everybody much more in the future unless they're stopped. One being Codex Alimentarius, and the other being Agenda 21. One is the desire to control all life, and the other one is the desire to control all food, which basically winds up controlling all life and all the health products and things of that nature. And I was wondering what kind of made you aware of these things, because they don't talk about Codex Alimentarius and Agenda 21 on TV. Where did you first start hearing about this information?
Well, I found out about Codex because I was searching the internet. It was not too long after I woke up to many of the other things that are going on in the world, and I started seeing these articles come up saying that Codex Alimentarius would be implemented on December 31st, 2009, and on January 1st, 2010, the sky would fall and nobody would have any access to vitamin or mineral supplements the world. So it was of great concern to me, because at the time I was very interested in vitamin and mineral supplements for personal reasons. And I started to research it to figure out what exactly was going on. At the time, I was just to write articles, and I figured that I would do some research and write an article about it, and quickly found out that you couldn't just write one article about Codex Alimentarius with disinformation out there, and I ended up writing an entire book on it. So that's how I became aware of it. Needless to say, the
I'm sorry. Your connection's breaking up pretty significantly there. If you could just quickly click off your webcam, it should probably improve the connection there significantly. Sorry about that, folks.
Okay.
We should have done that earlier. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, do I need to go back over that? Or?
No, yes, please.
Okay, well, so when I put this book together, again, the December 31st, 2009 thing that was repeated, that the sky would fall on December 31st, obviously it didn't come to fruition the world over. But to some extent, that was true. It wasn't just hype. On December 31st, 2009, the European Union Food Supplements Directive went into full effect in the European Union, which did many of the things that the Codex opponents were talking about to begin with, which was vastly reducing the amount of nutrition in vitamin and mineral supplements, completely removing many of those supplements off of the market totally. So this did happen in Europe. So if anybody wants to get an idea of what the Codex guidelines as they're implemented would look like, then look at Europe, look at the European Union Food Supplements Direct. Now, where the hype, again, I said it didn't happen the world over, but where some of the hype was not entirely a fabrication is the fact that because Codex is the standard-setting organization for the World Trade Organization, then technically the European Union or any other Codex-compliant nation could sue a nation that's not Codex compliant under the WTO trade dispute settlement mechanism for unfair trade practices. Now, WTO doesn't fine countries, to my knowledge, directly. But what they can allow is that they can allow another country to sue and gain money from the non-Codex compliant country. So it's essentially it's fine by default. So the European Union, to give you an example, would look like could sue the United States for unfair trade practices centering around export vitamin and mineral supplements, because our vitamin and mineral supplements have such higher levels of nutrition than the European Union supplements, simply because of the food supplements directive. So they could sue the United States via the WTO. And once they did that, the United States would have to pay out enormous sums of money. Now, could go, this go on exponentially if they sued Canada, Mexico, you know, Bolivia, whatever other nation under the WTO.
See, I can appreciate the irony, because it's usually the Americans who sue people for everything.
Yeah, it is ironic, isn't it? But don't worry, we're getting tonight, and we'll be suing people left and right before you know it.
Speaking of left and right, how long does it take to collapse that paradigm? And also, because the United Nations, I think, I don't know about you, but I see the United Nations just in itself as the sort of this tyrannical apparatus for world government. Yet it enjoys such an air of high esteem around the world. You know what I mean? Like, I remember I was talking with one of my friends in university, and she's real, real bright girl, and she's studying to be a doctor and a lawyer at the same time. She's that smart. And she wanted to, you know, her greatest dream was to go and work for the United Nations and help out the world and stuff like that. And I had no idea what the United Nations really was until much, much later. So if they can fool the most educated and most dedicated to helping humanity into enslaving it, wow, what chance do we stand to expose them before they actually manage to get these apparatus in place?
Well, that's a major problem, but of course the UN receives a lot of its support from the university system to begin with. The university system is what promotes the UN. That's where you recruit many of your worker bees through the United Nations, is the university system. So that's to be expected. It's unfortunate, but that's to be expected. The UN has always reported, I'm sorry for the traffic sounds if you can hear that, I'm outside. The UN is always reported as if it's bringing food to the hungry, you know, and they do that sometimes. But generally speaking, the food that they bring is loaded with strings, which are attached, loaded with opportunities for debt, military conquest, and sort of thing. So for a long time, I thought the United Nations was a great thing myself, because I mean, they only bring food to the hungry, right? But if you look at their propaganda, this is one of the things you could point out. Anybody who's health conscious in any way, who may not appreciate genetically modified foods, is that the United Nations is a big supporter of GMOs, because they promote GMOs as a way to increase production, increase the food supply for third world countries. And for especially Africa. Now, we know that genetically modified foods, they don't increase food productivity at all. In fact, they decrease food productivity. And everywhere it's been tried, genetically modified foods have a lower yield. That happened in India. So that's something you could point out to anybody if they're conscious of genetically modified foods. You can look at the other apparati of the United Nations, which I consider the IMF and the World Bank all part of this same system, world government system. The IMF, of course, which has a track record of 0% success the world over when it comes to economics. They're only successful if you consider implementing austerity programs as a success. So I would point out the failures of the IMF, really the failures of the UN, and everything that they've tried in their stated goals.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. And I even was lucky enough to have Branko Milanovic, who's the lead research economist for the World Bank, I believe. And I asked him point blank, does privatization actually help countries in order to, you know, get them economically independent in any way, shape or form? And he's like, no, I don't believe so. And what was interesting is that I reported that to a debate that was going on here in New Zealand between people who wanted to, I think the debate was over whether or not we wanted to ban Chinese ownership or not ban Chinese ownership. And the argument from both sides was, well, it doesn't matter whether or not we ban it or not ban it, because we're all going to have free trade and privatization, which is all good. You know, like the arguments are so wrong. And we'll reconnect you via phone over the break, Brandon. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Brandon Turnbull, and we're doing a little experiment here because his Skype connection is pretty awful, but his webcam is working. We've got him on cell phone, and we've got his Skype webcam working and the Skype muted. So it's a little bit of a technology bundle going on here. Brandon, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry about the poor connection here, but
yeah, it still sounds like a bit of a poor connection. Have you actually muted your Skype microphone?
Yeah, I actually have had it removed from the computer.
Okay, because it's still a little bit choppy there. Oh well, we'll see how we go. Anyway, what were we talking about before we were coming on to the break? It was about how the UN seems to impoverish nations, and because of it's tied in with the IMF and the World Bank and the WTO, which are traditionally, as far as I've seen, whenever anybody says the word free trade, it simply translates to me as slave trade. Whenever anybody says the word security, it translates for me as tyranny. And essentially, that's what the UN really does most of the time. They attempt to ensure security and free trade. Brandon, are you there? Brandon? I can't hear you, man. You can speak through your cell phone. AFR, we seem to be having problems with Brandon's cell phone there. Could you see what's going on? Please, you know, for the love of Norwegian cheese, perhaps. Because this is embarrassing. Sorry about this. Okay, you're back on the Skype there.
Yeah, maybe this will work.
Okay, it's working all right. I mean, technical issues, folks. It's our fault. All of our faults, really. It's not your fault, though. Okay, so anyway, did you hear what I said about the UN and the WTO and everything? It was button phone is good. Is the phone still connected there, Brandon? Is it picked up? I can't hear you at all. Cannot hear you at all. Apparently the phone was working good, but it was muted or something. The studio's trying to tell me that they're calling you back on that one. So just pick up that phone there when it rings. So sorry about this, folks. It happens. Especially when you're trying to do things on a shoestring budget, which reminds me, let's just take this opportunity to plug the VinnieEastwoodShow.com subscription service, shall we? Because I've been meaning to do it all week, and I also want to plug the chemtrail protest that's happening tomorrow in New Zealand. So if you're in Auckland tomorrow on the 20th of January, what we'd like for you to do is come down and meet us at Aotea Square at 11 a.m. So come down and meet us, Aotea Square, at 11 a.m. We're going to be marching down the street all the way down to the central transport hub of Britomart. We're going to have the banners, we're going to have the megaphones, we're going to have the gas masks, we're going to have the military garb and all of that kind of stuff. It's going to be a really nice, fabulous, friendly, yet incredibly scary chemtrail protest, and I'm sure there will be nice, lots of very lovely police officers to say hello to us and pepper spray us for no reason as well. And also, I wanted to encourage people to subscribe to the show. If you support what I'm doing, bringing on people like Brandon, you know, activists from all over the world who write books or host radio shows or do things basically essentially for the good of humanity. Freedom isn't free, folks. It really, really isn't. And I need your financial support. And I'm not. And need is not a strong enough word. Desperation is more of akin to it, right? I need people to go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com right now and click the subscribe button. Used to be you could only subscribe for $5 a month or $10 or $20 a month, and I've reduced that, and we'll give you access to commercial-free archives, both audio and video. And there are hour one, hour two, the whole show as well as a short clip that are all put in there commercial free for you if you're a subscriber to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com for as little as now $1 a month. Okay, $1 a month. And that will save you, if you're listening to the archives, approximately a half hour a day of listening time, presuming you listen to the show the whole way through, and you also have the choice of listening to either hour one or hour two. Like if you like one of the guests that we have on an hour and not the other, it gives you that freedom. It gives you that option. And I put an extra lot of work into ensuring that page is available for people, because I've been speaking to a lot of mates lately who listen to the archives at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and at AmericanFreedomRadio.com who don't listen to the ads. Okay, you're simply sitting there and you're skipping through them for whatever period of time, and essentially. If you're going to just skip the ads anyway, why not give us a buck a month and I'll skip the ads for you, save you the hassle, you know, save that repetitive strain syndrome on your wrist, y'all. Please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, click on the subscribe button, $1, $2, $3, $4, $5, $10, $20, whatever you can spare per month, something regular, so that I have a base income so that I can keep paying my bills and keep producing the show, keep doing all the videos, and basically be able to go to protests like what's happening on that kind of thing. Because without the subscriptions and donations thus far, I literally wouldn't be able to afford the gas to get down there to lead the protest. So thank you very much for those who've done so already. Brandon, I apologize for that ruthless, shameless self-promotion. But, you know, we're all broke for some reason or another. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we all are broke. That's why I'm sitting outside a coffee shop, because I can't afford adequate internet access, you know. So it's not a money-making scheme that we've gotten into here.
Mm-hmm. It certainly isn't. And if we were intelligent men doing this as a money-making scheme, we must be frickin' retarded.
We must be. We should get into a different business.
I don't know about you, man, but I can't. You know, I was a top salesman, 6 months top of the boards. You know, nobody could touch me, making a huge coin. And the fact of the matter is, I was working for sociopathic scum who didn't give a frack about me. I was working with my colleagues who were vacuous, pathetic trash who didn't give a frack about anything. And I can't do that anymore. That's the reason I'm doing this. Not because I have to, not because anybody's forcing me, but because I really, really fear the alternative. I can't go back to being a slave.
Yeah, once you wake up, you can't go back to sleep. You can't unknow something. You might be able to go back and involve yourself with the system for a while, but you're always going to know the truth of behind what you're doing, and it's just not a way I can live, you know, to ignore the things that are going on around me. And so you're right. I mean, the amount of effort that goes into the things that we do, it's not just a hobby. This is not, you know, building model ships and putting them in bottles. This is not something we do on our off time. This is, you know, at least for me, this is what I do with my life, and everything else is, you know, the day jobs or anything else would be the hobby that pays the bills. So.
I have this fear that, I wouldn't say fear. Actually, it's more of a hope that one day, instead of damaging the world and being paid huge quantities of cash for it, you could save the world and earn enough to live comfortably. That is the paradigm that I seek to change. Why shouldn't people be able to earn a living doing the right thing? It seems that only the people who are doing the vastly wrong thing are the richest people around. And I think it's all through fraud.
Well, they created the system. So they would create the system to suit themselves, and they would create a system where being a sociopath is putting you on the easy road to making money. I mean, the system is based on fraud. The system is based on ripping off everyone underneath you and around you. So, again, they created the system, so that's why they rise to the top of it. If you know the rules of the system that you created, then you can dominate that system and take advantage of everybody else below you.
You know, the only way to win a rigged game? To cheat.
Exactly. As Jesse Ventura said, if you can't win, cheat. He said that in his wrestling days. Not before I ruin his career.
Hey man, well, I don't know if it's this is another thing that I wanted to know as well, is the hero complex that we have. You know, there've been people that woke me up that I thought were great and would never tell a lie and stuff like that, and get disillusioned from it to the point, in fact, which I don't have any heroes anymore. I had to kind of let that complex go. Let the complex that there's going to be somebody to save me, there's going to be somebody to inform me, there's going to be somebody to make me free. And it occurred to me that that person doesn't exist outside of myself. That person is myself. I have to free myself. I have to enlighten myself. I have to build things that really matter and work. And I have to try and pass on whatever skill, talent, knowledge, or goodness on to other people, because you can't rely on other people to do it for you.
Right, and it's also freeing because you're no longer living vicariously through somebody else. You're no longer depending on somebody else for a part of your own identity, because that's really what the hero complex is, right? You're looking for somebody else subconsciously. Looking for somebody else to provide you with the answers that you really have yourself, that you're able to find yourself. And you know, you can only go so far with one teacher. You know, the people that woke me up, you know, you appreciate what they've done and you wish them the best, but you've got to move on at some point and learn other things, and then eventually go out on your own. I mean, it's think for yourself. And as you said, you know, spread this knowledge out to other people and spread solutions out to other people. And hopefully you can guide them on their way as well.
Mm. Well, the knowledge I find of the New World Order apparatus is in many ways a great burden. And the way that you reduce a burden upon yourself is if you share the load with others. I know many people who don't really do anything to try and spread the knowledge or anything like that. They'll sit at home, they'll listen to this kind of talk radio, they'll watch these kind of documentaries. Maybe their partner isn't awake or something like that, and they withdraw from them. They suddenly lose an interest in their friends who just don't share their interests and withdraw ever so much more into their own little circle. And it's a terrible situation to live in. And I know what it feels like because I used to live like that. I used to try and tell everybody, you know, F off. I don't care about, going out to a bar on the weekend or anything like that. I want to watch a documentary about how 9/11 was an inside job. See ya. And I quickly found myself alone and really, really angry that I wasn't able to fricking talk with anybody.
Yeah, and if there's any slight ray of hope, is that I see that that's changing a little bit now. When I first woke up to the things that were going on, and I would say, you know, whether it was 9/11, the martial law situation, the FEMA camp situation, there was nobody to talk to. As you said, I mean, it was complete wilderness. And just a few years on, I mean, I went through this phase where I felt that, I had to tell everybody, like you were saying, I had to tell everybody all of this stuff. And initially, when you find this information, it makes so much sense. I mean, it's documented right there. You can pull up all the information that you need on the internet, relatively free. And why wouldn't anybody that you show this information to just automatically take it up? Why wouldn't they automatically go the same route that you went? And you quickly find out that it doesn't matter how much proof you have, how much you put in front of these people, how much you hold their hand and spoon feed them the information, that a lot of them just aren't going to pay it any attention. And some of the best and the brightest that I tried to show the information to, I was crushed when I realized that these people don't get it at all.
Hold on a sec, Brandon. We're coming to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's now the final segment of the first hour, our last chance to talk with Brandon Turbeville. Now, I'd like you just continue and finish your point that we were talking about over the break about the isolation and heroes, that kind of thing, if you remember your train of thought there.
Yeah, well, what I was saying is that when you first wake up and you try to spread all this information around and you can't find anybody, which was the case for me a few years ago, you couldn't find anybody to talk to. I had the benefit of having at least one friend that woke up at exactly the same time, but outside of that, outside the two of us, we had nobody to talk to. Most people don't even have a friend that they can compare notes with. But what I'm finding more and more is that there are more and more people who you run into who are awake. Here in rural South Carolina, I'm running into more and more people who they might not have heard of Brandon Turbeville or Vinnie Eastwood or David Icke, but they're intuitively picking up on some of the things that we're talking about, some of the things that we understand. They might not voice it in their circles because we're still in a vast minority here, but the fact is they are picking up on it on their own, without anybody coming to them and saying, here's a documentary, here's a book, here's some information. It's something that they're starting to question within themselves. And
this leads me to believe that there is something happening the world over where people are picking up on the things that we're talking about without necessarily having to hear us talk about them. So there is some room for hope in this whole situation, which I didn't feel that there was just a couple of years ago. In fact, I didn't feel that there was much hope. If you'd have talked to me 6 months ago, I didn't feel that there was much hope then, but now I do, and I'm seeing these things seeing these things happen wherever I go, that there are people who, again, are picking up on this without having the information spelled out in front of them.
It's kind of like the 100th monkey syndrome, or this 2012 shift sort of. I don't know whether or not to believe it. Like, a friend of mine told me the other day that the 2012 shift actually is happening, but only for those who are really sensitive to it. And I was just thinking about the placebo effect, right? You give a pill to somebody that's just made out of sugar and you tell them it's something else, and about 30% of people, that sugar pill will actually work because their mind makes it real. What if 30% of the people maybe believed that 2012 was actually going to shift something, was going to change them, was going to help them evolve to a higher level of consciousness, and then when it came, their belief actually made them start to evolve a little bit, you know? Well, for some reason, I've noticed my girlfriend and a couple of my friends, they're switched on a lot more in 2013 than they were in 2012. I don't know how to explain it. It might be because we're starting to reach that critical mass point now of mass awareness, that it becomes impossible to ignore the truth.
Yeah, and if it's a placebo effect, well, then I'll take it. Whatever makes it work, I'll take it. But yeah, like you just said, especially since the new year, I have started to notice more and more people picking up on things, whether it's on a spiritual level, physical level, political level, that they are picking up on it. Now, you might not be able to tell from looking at the current events that are happening as they're reported in the mainstream media or even in the alternative media. But when you really get into a conversation with people, person to person, and you talk to people on a one-on-one level, not all people, but a great many people, you can see this shift taking place. And, you know, it's about time.
About fracking time. I was also thinking about this as well. It's just shifting from the savior mentality, okay? Somebody's going to come down from the clouds, or aliens, or some sort of ethereal universe. I can see everything and now in living color where everything was black and white. Basically, that whole mentality of things will go good or things will go bad and nothing's within your control, I think is just sort of like a Quaker mentality, like it doesn't matter what you do. And I think if people really truly believe that it doesn't matter what they do, then they've simply abdicated all personal responsibility and all their choices. And not to mention, they've forgotten that they're a human being. And a human being, no matter how disadvantaged they may be, no matter how flawed we are incredibly powerful when we want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about it is that, and I've been talking about this for some time, is that, you know, here in the alternative media, we talk about all the things that are happening to us on a daily basis. And it's important to know the things that have happened to us in the past so we know where we stand today. We need to know what's happening to us so we can so we can act accordingly. We need to know where we stand. But at some point, the time for talk is going to have to end, and it's going to have to be time for action. And it's going to have to be time for us to stop just repeating what's happening to us on a daily basis and reacting to what's happening to us and actually start responding and actually start doing things in a coordinated fashion. Because even if we educate a large number of people, you know, they say knowing is half the battle. Well, yeah, that might be true, but it's only half. And you're going to have to go on the offense at some point and get some wins in our column. And I wrote an article back before 2013, before the new year, and it's called It's Time for the Aware to Take Action. And it's all about building coalitions and actually doing something to change the situation that we're in instead of just talking about it. In that article, I give an example of the Syriza party in Greece, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it was a grouping of organizations and parties that on their own counted for nothing. They would get like 0.3% of the vote, or maybe 3% of the vote at most in the Greek election. They have their two major parties there, PASOK and New Democracy. But they came together with a united front, and they showed that they had demands. That was the most important thing. They had a program and demands that they all came together under. Most of these groups didn't even get along with each other to begin with, but they were able to maintain their independence and their individuality and use a set of demands to show a united front. The first election that they were involved in Greece, they got 40% of the vote. Now, they didn't sit around and complain with one another. They came up with a set of demands, and they showed a united front. And they didn't win the election, but they got 40% of it. That's pretty close. And now, as you can see, they were about to have new elections in Greece. Now the Greek, I think it's New Democracy that's in now, they're trying to back off of the austerity a little bit, just so Syriza can't win the Greek elections. Well, maybe Syriza won't win the Greek elections, but the fact is they've got a shot in because the Greek government is backing off on some of the austerity. It's not a winning shot, but it's a shot. We can do that here in the United States. We have an organization called the United Front Against Austerity that's trying to get off the ground here to form a resistance based on economic demands. We can do that in New Zealand, in any other country, right, to come up not with a set of complaints of we don't like this, we don't like that, but to come up with a set of demands. We don't like this, but this is what we want you to do about it. This is what we demand that you do, and if we win this revolutionary battle, for lack of a better term, this is what we will do. So I think that's important for us to not simply worry about what the enemy is doing, but to start worrying about what we're doing and what we plan to do and what we want to see as far as change goes, and then work toward that. So we don't have to constantly be against something. We can be for something.
You know, that reminds me of the Founding Fathers, who, for the most part, who for a large part, really hated each other. But you know what they hated worse? Being slaves. You know? And this is what I don't like about so many people in the truth movement. I'm not going to name names. I want to, but I'm not going to, because it would kind of make me a hypocrite. We criticize other people in the truth movement instead of criticizing the people who are actually our enemy. You know? Who's a bigger threat to you? Another truther or a jackboot thug in a fracking black uniform or a corrupt politician who passes legislation to warrantly wireless tap you? Who's your enemy? Figure it out. Stop fighting yourselves. Okay? A friend of mine in Australia, he was telling me that there's these big race riots. It's the Aboriginal people of Australia and the Pacific Island peoples that have immigrated to Australia having riots against each other, and the police are in the middle trying to stop them from hurting each other. And you know who's hurt the Aborigines? And you know who's arrested the Pacific Islanders and destroyed their communities and intimidated them more? The police! You know, don't attack the person who's actually suppressing you. Just attack each other for no reason. That was what I found really, really insane. Divide and conquer, personified. Let's stop doing it. Let's come together. Let's collaborate on the points that we agree. The points that we disagree, we can leave those for another time. Preferably a time when there's no longer an agenda to exterminate us because we've managed to beat it, because we came together, because the time was right. Brandon, thank you very much for coming on the show with me today, my son. You can check out his articles. Brandon, turbeville.com, turbeville, T-U-R-B-E-V-I-L-L-E, .com, and also activistpost.com. Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, we'll see you again sometime. And thank you very much for listening too, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back next hour, assuredly.